Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, hey, I'm Scott. It's my show. Oh, man, I need to hit the button here. I'm doing too many things at once, trying to do a live radio show and typing an email and making a Skype call and babbling into a microphone and watching Fox News. Oh, God. All right. Well, I'm all right, though. I'm going to put the email aside for a minute, and I'm going to turn away from Fox News for sanity's sake, and I'm going to introduce our friend Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst for 27 years. He's now the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. What they do is they write letters, open letters, to public officials saying, no, no, you're wrong, and the horrible thing that you're doing is horrible and will cause terrible consequences. And then it's all signed by a bunch of former CIA officers and former military intelligence officers and former FBI agents and that kind of thing. Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Also, he has his own website, which is raymcgovern.com, and he writes for Robert Perry over there at consortiumnews.com, where, you know, they win the Scott Horton Award at Consortium News, certainly for their coverage of the Ukraine crisis and America's relationship with Russia over the last year, better than anything at The Nation or anywhere else, and especially on a consistency basis there. The great Bob Perry, no matter what he says about us libertarians, the great Bob Perry and our friend Ray McGovern and their great coverage of Ukraine over there. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Ray?
Thank you, Scott. Doing well. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too. Very happy to have you back on the show again. And so your most recent piece here is called Rebuilding the Obama-Putin Trust, and goes along with, like I just mentioned, many other articles along these same lines, especially over the past year here. But I guess to get right to the point, we're going to have to get to the history first. Can you tell us as briefly as you can you state the case for what it is that you believe transpired last February 21st, 22nd in the regime change or the change of government, however, I don't want to prejudice it, the end of the presidency of the last guy there in Ukraine leading up to the current controversy?
Yeah, Yanukovych was deposed by a coup led by neo-fascist groups. On the 22nd of February, a day after an international agreement had been worked out with the Ukrainian authorities, whereby Yanukovych, the president, would leave early, there would be early elections, and everything seemed to be on track. Now, all of a sudden, there were snipers shooting at both sides of the people on Maidan Square, and we had the invasion of the federal offices and the president's building and the Congress there. And Western legend, eaten up by the New York Times, Washington Post, everybody else, is that Yanukovych fled. You know, he left. He disappeared. This was a classic coup d'etat. As a matter of fact, the president of Stratfor, you know, no left-wing organization that, I said that this is the most blatant coup that in the history of mankind. It had been advertised on YouTube 3 weeks before, so most people know that story. In any case, that was the proximate cause of why the people out in the eastern, southeastern part of Ukraine didn't want any part of this coup government, which, as I say, was pushed into power largely by pro-Nazi forces who are fighting the what are called, this is important, what are called pro-Russian separatists out there. Well, they're not pro-Russian separatists. They're anti-coup federalists. Big difference. They don't like the fact that their duly constituted elected president was removed in a coup arranged by the United States and the EC, and they're not about to submit to them. Now, has Russia encouraged them in this? They needed no encouragement. What they did need is some political and some military support. Let's face it. But, you know, what the Western version starts out with, and I encounter this all the time as I do interviews with places like the BBC.
Say, all right, Mr. McGovern, now, how do you feel about Russian aggression and Putin seizing the Crimea?
Right, and I right. say, well, you know, why do you start at the seventh inning here?
Well, what do you mean, seventh inning?
I said, well, you know, this all started, approximately at least, with the coup d'etat in Kiev, orchestrated openly by our State Department, and Putin. Putin had no idea. There's not one scintilla of evidence that Putin and his friends there had any idea of reincorporating the Crimea into Russia proper until the coup, and that forced their hand. So people can't start with the seizing and quote of Crimea. They need to start with the background, and there's even more background, as you know. We've talked about it before. The whole business about the U.S. and NATO violating their pledge, their promise to Gorbachev and Shevardnadze way back in 1990, that NATO would not move, quote, one inch eastward, end quote, toward the Soviet Union at the time and toward Russia. And as we know by now, there have been 14 new states joining NATO, all of them to the east of East Germany. So that's the earlier cause. After 25 years, that's still great. So the question arises in Putin and other people's minds, why do they need to do this? What are they really after? And that's the question that needs to be resolved this year.
Right. Well, and I hate to divert off onto this, but it is important, and it can't always go without saying, but it usually does when we talk about this stuff. So the responsibility of the American people for listening, I mean, not that they've really supported the policy or whatever, but they tend to buy these stories hook, line, and sinker, no matter how many times we get hit with this. It's not like the last time this happened, it was Lyndon Johnson lied to us about the Gulf of Tonkin, right? We've had this over and over and over again, where whatever it is that they say about what's going on is never true. I mean, the North Korea Sony hack is the one from, you know, the most recent one, where there's really no reason to believe that North Korea has anything to do with it whatsoever, at least that we've heard so far. They won't let that stop them on TV. And according to the polls, or at least according to what the TV claims the polls say, Ray, 75% of the American people are willing to snap to and say, yeah, let's get North Korea. They're the enemy. They're out to get us. Oh, yeah, no, the evil Vladimir Putin is on the march. He wants to recreate the Russian Empire. He's an aggressor. And what's America going to do to contain his aggression? TV said so. Even after Iraq, even after Libya, even after all these things. So it seems like there's a responsibility at some point on the adults of this society to really put their foot down and say no more to this. And to say, no, we just don't believe you. Whatever it is that you're claiming is just a claim to us. And whoever it is that you're accusing is presumed innocent by us because you guys are liars and killers. I mean, what are we even talking about?
Well, Scott, you put your finger on it, and since this is a new year, I'll say what I've said every year for the last 12, that I've seen a lot of change in Washington in 50 years, but by far the most significant change, by far, is the fact that we no longer have, in any real sense, a free media. That is big. So the fourth estate is dead. Now, the good news is there's a fifth estate. We're speaking on it now. Young people are much more attuned to the fifth estate, and so we have to find ways to get grown-up people, old as I am or almost as old as I am, to tune in to where they can get real news. That is a formidable challenge, and I think we're making progress, but it's slow. You can't hold the American people innocent for avoiding these kinds of things, but you can say, well, given the economics of the situation here among most Americans, you know, they have one or two jobs, they come home, they feed the kids, they put their feet up, and they don't want to go into consortiumnews.com. They want Fox News, and they think they're getting news from that. Right. That doesn't excuse them, but it explains an awful lot.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, James Fallows has this thing in The Atlantic, mostly blaming the American people and letting the government off the hook, and they're the ones who are – you know, the actual politicians in charge are the ones. But anyway, I'm sorry. We got to take this break. We'll be right back with the great Ray McGovern in just one sec, y'all. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott. I'm talking with Ray McGovern here. Veteran intelligence professional for sanity and writer at consortiumnews.com. Check out his website, raymcgovern.com, as well. And we're talking about America's relationship with Russia. And I'm sorry, I got us all off diverted on the media and the American people and this and that and whatever, Ray. And I would get straight back to what you were saying about the relationship of Eastern Ukraine and the West and the American role, except that I think right when we were going out to break, you were trying to say one more thing there were interrupted. So if you wanted to wrap up one more point about the American people and the foreign policy here.
Well, I think pretty much I said it. It's a terribly unfortunate situation when the American people can't learn the truth. I guess I was going to adduce the worst example ever. John Mearsheimer, preeminent political professor, political science professor at University of Chicago, widely respected. He writes this article in Foreign Affairs, and they print it, and it says the U.S. is responsible for the troubles in Ukraine. And it lays out all the evidence. Now,
Foreign Affairs being the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, the most prestigious think tank for 100 years running now in New York.
You're provoking me. Okay. Well, anyhow, you know, they did print it. And I asked John, I said, John, did you get any reaction to that? He said, oh, well, yeah, phone ran off the hook. But, you know, Ray, it was French TV. It was Italian. It was another. I didn't get a reaction from any of the outlets here in the States. I emailed him back, said, John, is that unusual when you're speaking out on a very current sort of very topical issue? He said, you know, Ray, come think of it. Yeah, I never answered something like this before. So there you go. I mean, here he succeeds in writing this thing. The editor of Foreign Affairs, to his credit, puts it in their magazine. It is the preeminent whatever it is. And nobody comments on it. Nobody mentions it, not even on MSNBC. And so it sort of dies a natural death. Now, if that were highlighted, if the American people knew the facts in that article, they would know that the Ukrainian situation is not a matter of Putin trying to get back the Soviet Union or, you know, invading the Ukraine and threatening NATO, that it's a much more complicated affair, and that it's really a function of the neocons who are in charge of our foreign policy, and I include John Kerry, the Secretary of State, in that, really smarting from their failed attempt to get a war started between the U.S. and Syria back in September of last year, 2013, okay? They were right on the verge. The Israeli air defenses were up. The French fighter bombers were on the tarmac warming up, and Obama changed his mind. Now, he changed his mind because he found out that those so-called chemical attacks by the government of Syria were not that at all, that the sarin used was not from Syrian government stocks. It was homemade. Almost certainly it came from the rebels who were trying to mousetrap Obama with full cooperation from the neocons into starting this war on the pretext that the Syrian government had violated the red line that they had persuaded Obama to set. So they were really angry about that. I was up on the top of CNN headquarters there doing an interview with BBC International the night after, and Wolfowitz the senator from Lieberman and all those guys, I never saw them so down in the mouth. They didn't get their war. Now, how could they retaliate, move up their preparations for the coup in Ukraine? And that's exactly what happened. Putin's involved in the Olympics down there in Sochi. When he gets back from the Olympics, all of a sudden, the Maidan is in flames and the coup happens. And that's what forced him to act, of course. You know, the main naval base, their only warm water naval base since Catherine the Great at the time of our revolution is in Crimea. And Putin is not about, or no Russian leader is about to even risk the remote chance that Ukraine would join NATO. And as he said in a sort of jocular way, he said, you know, I'd hate to see a situation where our armed forces would have to be visiting the NATO naval base in Sevastopol, in Crimea. I'd much rather have it the way it is now, where they're happy, we're happy to have them visit our naval base in Sevastopol, you know?
Isn't he such a raving fanatic lunatic, that Putin, with his deadpan humor and his little, you know, we considered it and we thought, actually, we would rather invite you guys to be our guests instead.
Well, you know, he's kept his cool through all this. And, you know, right after he, pulled Obama's chestnuts out of the fire. You know, he was going to do this war on Syria. It would be bedlam, even worse bedlam there than it is now. And Putin said, hey, Barack, remember we talked about this at the summit in Northern Ireland? We've brought the Syrians around. I think they're willing to destroy all their chemical weapons. Obama says, really? He says, yeah. Now, Kerry, he's cut out of all this. He says that same day,
they will never give up their weapons. That's never going to happen. Never give it their chemical weapons. Okay.
What happens? Within 4 days, the chemical treaty was signed, and now all those Syrian chemical weapons were destroyed. Now, that should make the neocons happy, because that was Syria's major deterrent to an attack from Israel. But no, it enraged them because it removed the pretext for war. And so what I'm saying here is that they were going to get even. And this is not the only motivation, but you can see Victoria Nuland handing out chocolate chip cookies to get the sugar level up on the Maidan, and openly talking, or not openly, but the intercepted conversation with the ambassador in Kiev, where she says, yeah, Yats is our guy. The others can wait in the wings. Yats knows about the economics here. He knows what the IMF will require. He's our guy. And sure enough, I was really shocked at this. 3 weeks later, I wake up in the morning, 23rd of February, and guess what? There's been a coup in Ukraine, and who's the new prime minister? Yats! Yatsenyuk, okay? So I wrote a little article saying, yikes!
Right, and it's not even like the leak came out later. The leak came out before the regime change, and then they still did it exactly like in the script.
Yeah, so the revolution may not be televised, Scott, but this coup was YouTubized. My God, you know.
And then the leaders of the NSA said, how dare the Russians spy on our diplomatic phone calls?
It was an open line, for God's sake.
The good news is I don't have a third guest today, so I'm going to ask you politely, and you're going to graciously offer to stay one more segment with us to talk more about this subject, because we're not done yet, are we?
Okay,
good. It's Ray McGovern, everybody. He's at consortiumnews.com. And him and Bob Perry, they're the dynamic duo over there on, first of all, the matter of the Syrian chemical weapons incident of 2013, and then most especially their coverage of the coup in Ukraine, the use of the Nazis by the American side there, the Russian reaction, the aftermath, and setting the record straight for the last year and change there, consortiumnews.com. It's the great Ray McGovern, and we'll be right back with more right after this. Thanks for staying on, Ray. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Okay, me again. Scott Horton here. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, scotthorton.org for the archives. Talking with the great Ray McGovern from consortiumnews.com and raymcgovern.com. Former CIA analyst, specialist on the Soviet Union back in the day, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're talking about the aftermath of the American-backed coup d'etat of February last year and using real, no fooling, Hitler-loving Nazis to seize the buildings, drive the president out of the Capitol. And some of the leaders of those Nazi groups have actually made it into the parliament now. So it's not like they were just sort of the lowest brown shirt auxiliaries. They are part of the leaders of the new government there, these Nazis. And then, as Ray put it before, the people in the East who had you know, supported and won the election and had supported the previous president, they decided they weren't going to put up with that any more than Texans would support it if a bunch of communists seized power in Washington, D.C. or something like that. They would probably go for the fascists, but you know what I mean. Anyway, point being that here we are in this mess. And as you were before the break, and we were interrupted there, Ray, you were at the part where the neocons were really mad at Russia for saving the American people from getting into another war, this time with Syria, in August of 2013 over the sarin hoax there, which it turned out was really Jabhat al-Nusra that did it with help from the Turks. Then they decided, well, we're going to get back at Putin. Maybe more to the point, we're going to get back at Obama for working with Putin. We're going to make sure that that kind of catastrophe doesn't happen again by finding a way to drive a further wedge between the United States and Russia. And they picked Ukraine as their lowest hanging fruit to be their target to hit next. Is that your conviction of the real motivation for the coup in the first place?
Yeah, that's not the exclusive motivation, but it's the lion's share of it, Scott. There are also, you know, the mega corporations, the international ones that covet Ukraine for its very real natural resources, the black earth and other resources, and would love to have a cheap supply of cheap labor coming on into the EC to help them, develop their own economies. So make a Greece out of Ukraine, which is where it seems to be headed. If something doesn't intervene. But you know, what I'd like to do is just kind of speak a little bit out of my experience. I was a chief of the Soviet Foreign Policy Branch in CIA way back when, and I've followed Russia and the Soviet Union ever since my degrees in academe.
You were the chief of it, huh? I guess I never realized that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you a secret. Now, this is not to go outside this room, right, Scott?
All right.
Bobby Gates worked for me.
Oh, I already knew that.
Yeah, yeah. He worked for me for 2 years, 70 to 72. And when I wrote his fitness report, I mentioned that he was reasonably bright, but his ill-concealed ambition was a disruptive influence in the branch, and that unless he sort of cut it back, he was going to be trouble for everybody. Little did I know. And I wrote that, you know. And so people said to me later, 10 years later, when Bobby Gates became head of all analysis, Ray, I bet you regret being so frank in a fitness report. I said, I don't regret a word of it. Look what happened. We're all working for that scoundrel, and we were. Anyhow, that's a diversion, but I do know something about Russia and the Soviet Union, and it was almost kind of, it was fun is the wrong word, but it was kind of good for me to get back in the game when I saw what was happening with Ukraine. Now, we get all these reports by so-called journalists, which talk to the State Department people and others, and think they get these scoops about what the Russians are really after. But in those days, we had to rely about 90% for our source information on open media. And there was this subdiscipline of political science called media analysis. It was a no-brainer. You read really carefully what the Russians, or in those days the Soviets, were saying, and you looked for changes in what they were saying. Or you just looked to see, well, could they really believe what I remember going to my boss, you know, as a really young analyst, I said, you know, I think the Russians are really afraid of the Germans. I don't think it's just propaganda. He put his feet up on the desk, looked up at the fluorescent lights and says, Ray, you're telling me the lights are on, okay? So you learn a lot. Now, if you just look at Russian media and you just read, you know, nobody reads anymore. You read Putin's speeches. Here's what he said, for example, right after the coup in Ukraine. He said, you know, our Western partners, you know, they continue to interfere in the Ukraine. I sometimes get the feeling that somewhere across that huge puddle in America, people sit in a lab and conduct experiments as if with rats without actually understanding the consequences of what they're doing. Why do they need to do this? He's talking, of course, about the coup. And then he says, look, it's bad enough what they're doing, but the deployment of a missile defense system is the worst. Now, you may recall that Obama, in an overheard
unintentionally overheard conversation with Medvedev, who was president of Russia at the time, right before Obama was reelected. Medvedev is saying, look, you don't need an anti-ballistic missile system in Europe. Why? There's not a threat from us, much less from Iran. Why do you do that? North Korea, give me a break. And Obama says, and it's overheard. He says, well, give me some space. So let me get reelected first, and then we deal with this. Well, he's unable to deal with this. And the important thing is that the Russians believe that he is a captive of the military-industrial complex and the security state. And he doesn't have the freedom to do the kinds of things even that he did with respect to Syria in bowing to the pressure to stop the war and being given an out by Putin. So that's big. If the Russians really think that Obama, who I believe they think is the most sensible person around, although extremely malleable and susceptible of all kinds of crazy ideas, if he at least senses that, for example, a missile defense system is not what's needed to cause even more tensions in Europe, and he's unable to deliver on that, which, that was 2012, right? So it's over two years now. The Russians, what are they going to do? Are they going to sit around and let U.S. Newly fitted out naval ships with anti-ballistic missile systems crowd into the Black Sea and the Baltic and in Central Europe and endanger what has always been the Russians' strategic weapons deterrent? Are they going to do that? Well, no, they're going to do everything they can to prevent that. But failing preventing that, what does that leave? That leaves launch on warning. That's kind of a trade phrase to say as soon as the Russians suspect that the Americans are up to something really, really, really strategically important, they are going to be tempted to launch their deterrent on warning. And we're being the situation that we were before 1972 when those strategic arms limitations treaties were signed. I was in Moscow at 72 at the time. Nixon came. It was a big deal, and it kept this balance of terror until the end of the Cold War. Who wants to reintroduce this balance of terror?
So I'll wait, you're
the
saying
people make money out of it.
You're saying that this, when Kissinger says this would be a tragedy if we get back into full-scale Cold War, this is what he's talking about, is a situation that he helped undo with the detente of the 1970s. But you're saying it's been since then. Reagan didn't even undo that during his brinksmanship in the 80s and abandoning of detente. They still didn't. He didn't ratchet up the situation so that they were back to launch on warning again. Since when? The early 70s, you say? Oh,
well,
man.
Yeah, of course we
Ray,
have.
Stay another segment with me, would you?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. As long as we're going, right? The rest of this news will have to wait till tomorrow. Boy, do I have Israel news for you guys, too. But I'll see if I can get a good guest to help cover it. Did you see the one about Naftali Bennett in the Jerusalem Post today, Ray? Check that out during the break. We'll be right back, y'all. Hey, Al Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back. I got the great Ray McGovern on the line talking about Russia. So, I'm sorry. I'm terrible at watching this clock, Ray. Did I understand you right there about the launch on warning thing that you were saying it's been since the early 70s since the Russians had such an itchy trigger finger on their H-bombs?
Yeah. Well, Scott, it's really pretty simple, and of course, when you're as old as I am, you remember these things, especially since I was deeply involved in them. The strategic equation was really, really very labile, as the Germans say, very itsy-kitsy, and it was decided that we, the CIA, could monitor the deployment of Soviet missiles and Soviet missile defense systems, okay? So when we proved to Reagan that, when he said,
Doverai, no provierai, trust, but also verify. We said, okay, Mr. President, we can verify. And so he took that aboard, went to talk to Gorbachev, who the honest ones of us Russian analysts at the time told everyone who would listen was the real deal, despite what Bobby Gates and Casey were saying about the Communist Party of the Soviet Union never disappearing, never giving up power, okay? And they negotiated with Gorbachev, and that's, of course, how right after the Berlin Wall fell, George H.W. Bush was able to say, look, the dream that I portrayed in my speech in Mainz earlier this spring can be true. We can have a Europe whole and free from Portugal to the Urals. Let's invite Russia in. Let's get this thing set up so that there's a security system to cover all of Europe. Now, as we know, Clinton and others went back on that. But the thing is that the strategic thing had always been pretty solid until, of course, George Bush revoked the key agreement. And that was a treaty signed in May of 1972. As I say, I was there. It was a treaty called the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, and it limited each side to two sites to have an anti-ballistic missile system. And pretty soon that became one site. And what did that end up doing? That ended up saying that neither side could count on immunity were they to launch a first strike, because there would be no way to prevent a second strike, because they would have no viable nationwide anti-missile system. Now, what's happening now is, as the Russians see it, and anyone in their position would see it, you know, this is a canard that Iran is a threat to the United States, and the same with North Korea. If they're going to fire missiles at us, it's not going to be over Europe. And so the missile system that the military and the corporations want to build is designed against Russia. That's pure and simple. And Obama seemed to recognize that when he told Medvedev, you know, back in 2012, look, you know, we'll talk about this, but first let me get reelected and give me some space until I get reelected. Well, there's been two years plus space. No. So how can they trust us? That's the big thing. How can Putin look at the history since the fall of the Berlin Wall? Look at what Obama has to, in my view, has had to acquiesce in because he's got no guts and because the military and the security services are running this country. And just ask yourself, now, if you were Putin, you know, you would keep your cool for as long as you could. But if they keep building these systems, and if they, worse still, start to incite a regular war in Ukraine, well, all bets are off, because he has the high cards there. He's not going to launch any ballistic missiles at us, but he is going to be very, very firm in defending what he sees and what most reasonable people would see, I would add, as Russian national security interests in that part of the world where the U.S. has very questionable national security interests.
And so now Obama and the Republicans are given hundreds of millions of dollars more in military aid to the Kiev government to help them continue waging war against the people in the east. And they're on again, off again, ceasefires. But, I mean, is it as simple as if Kiev is ready to win outright over the Luhansk and Donetsk resistance, whatever you call them, that the Russians will absolutely be guaranteed to intervene there militarily?
That's correct.
And I don't mean little green men, but I mean a real invasion.
They will prevent those parts of the Ukraine from being folded back under a repressive regime such as is now existing in Kiev. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. Now, what they've tried to do is work out arrangements where things would be short on that. In other words, these eastern provinces could be, well, the Russians really want, they don't want to do what they did with respect to Crimea, to the eastern provinces. They don't want them, and the eastern provinces don't want to become part of Russia. So there is the makings of a deal. The problem is that egged on by Congress and the military-industrial complex and the corporations to make a lot of money out of tensions in this part of Europe, that Obama is playing that kind of game, and he's telling Yaroshenko, the new prime minister, president, he said, go ahead, you know, give him a bloody nose. And I don't think that Obama or anybody he has working for him in the State Department or in the White House knows diddly about war is what really like. And Putin does. And that's why I see him as being less inflammatory, less provocative. But when push comes to shove, that's his part of the world. He's not going to let these Ukrainian folks, less still, the ones headed by neo-fascists, prevail in that part of the Ukraine.
All right. Well, so, well, I don't know. A couple of things here. First of all, I want to give a little bit of credit to a guy named Klaus Eric, who has warned about the missile defense system and the push against Russia, forcing them into the position of moving back to a launch on warning position. He has made that comment on virtually every interview I've ever posted on antiwar.com or on my own website for a decade now. And his point is, this is the only thing that matters in the whole world, okay? That America and Russia don't have an H-bomb war. It's the only thing that matters. Nothing else matters compared to that. And, you know, he's right about that. It's something we should talk about, and I'm happy to, you know, point out that he's really done a great job of beat me over the head about that. Not so much of a good job of getting me to cover it as much as he would like, but he's certainly right about that. But then, so, I mean, what the hell is the strategy here, Ray? Why give, I know, domestic politics and whatever, but why are the Americans giving military aid to the Kiev government when it looks like that could help them provoke this? I mean, we're not talking chess. We're talking checkers here. They push that far, then no king me, and instead a worse war. Come on.
Well, Congress is one of the major flies in the ointment here. They have no idea what fire they're playing with. They do have lots of ideas how they stay in power. They stay in power because they appropriate money for the military-industrial complex, security complex, and that money is spent on weapons and so forth, and a slice of that money comes back into their coffers, and they get reelected, and so they appropriate more money. It's that simple. There are, you know, pecuniary elements with a major role here. The other thing is that since they don't know really what kind of fire they're playing with, it's very, very popular to blame everything on Putin. He's the big bad guy. The major media reinforce that. And so unless Obama can seize the bull by the horns, and we suggest, or I suggest at the end of my latest piece, he needs to fire Kerry and Nuland. That would speak volumes to everybody in the world that realizes what's really at play here. Now, can he do that? I don't care whether he do that or not, but he should realize that Putin, the president of Russia, called Kerry a liar. Now, he called him a liar 5 days before Obama arrived in St. Petersburg for a summit. Now, why did he do that? Because Kerry lied to the U.S. Congress 2 days before. He said the moderate rebels are winning in Syria. Nobody believed that. And then he repeated this canard about Bashar al-Assad being responsible for the chemical warfare stuff, or these chemical attacks outside Damascus on August 21, 2013. So Putin said, I was really taken with this because I've never seen this happen before. He says, он врет. Он знает, что врет, это печально, which means he's lying. He knows that he's lying. This is really sad. Now, so if Kerry is still given his head here, and he gives in turn the power to Nuland and others to create more mischief, there is no telling what they might be what they might try to provoke. Hopefully, saner minds will prevail. But if I were Putin, I'd be looking around for saner minds in this country, and I'd be hard pressed to find any. So that's why I say this is going to be a crucial year for this overreaching, this transcendent reality that the strategic equation is in danger of changing in a way that has not been since 1972, when we had a treaty that prevented any side thinking that they could launch a first strike.
Right. Okay. Now, as long as we're over time, and we are, but hell, I want to ask you this. It's really important. What about Belarus
And what about Russia itself? Of course, right around the time of the start of the Maidan protests in the fall of 2013, you had this essay in a series of threats, basically, in the Washington Post by a guy named Gershman, who I think Carl Gershman, the head of USAID, which is just the CIA's outsourced soft color-coded regime change operation, basically,
yeah,
right?
The National Endowment for Democracy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for the correction. Yes, the NED. And I'm not exactly sure what the difference is in their roles. If you want to clarify that, I'd like to hear it. But he was saying, yeah, and maybe you're next, Putin, is how the thing ends. If he doesn't like it, maybe he'll find himself in the same position there in Moscow. And I wonder whether you think that's really on the agenda for Kerry and Nuland and the coming Jeb Bush administration.
Well, Nuland famously
playing with fire there, you know.
They are, and this is doubtless in the calculations of Putin. Think about it. Here's Nuland openly bragging that we have, as she said, devoted $5 billion—that's billion with a B—dollars to satisfying Ukraine's aspirations to become part of the West, end quote. Whoa, $5 billion. You know how many fascists you can buy with $5 billion?
Yeah, quite a few.
She wasn't talking the previous year. She's talking, you know, she worked on regime change and building democratic structures for Iraq. Can you imagine? Under Dick Cheney. So she's got a lot of experience in all this. And when she said $5 billion, she knows what she was talking about. Now think about Putin. And now he's hearing from one of the funnels for all this money, the National Endowment for Democracy, called Gershman. He's hearing that, you know, you better watch out because the next, after the Maidan, then comes the Red Square, and you gotta, you know, watch out because this is gonna happen to you. Well, the big thing here, in my view, Scott, is this, that if you want to stop, if you're really authentically concerned about stopping more oppression in Russia, putting the Russians back to the security state they used to be, the way to guarantee that is to threaten them the way we're doing right now, to stir up things in Ukraine, to make sure that the relations between Russia and America are as bad as they can be. And that gives Putin not only the pretext, but gives him ample reason to clamp down in a way that he probably wouldn't if he hadn't felt so threatened. So this is one of the major realities when people say, oh, yeah, well, you don't say anything about Putin's repression, you know. Well, yeah, all right, there's only so much time. But in a very real sense, part of this repression is directly due to the external threat, which is as real as it is imagined, given what's happened in the Ukraine.
Yep. Where's the health of the state? That's why his poll numbers are so high right now. Same happens everywhere. That's why people support the Ayatollahs in Iran. That's why Fidel Castro's remained in power for so long. Is, you know, what better foil than to go up against the American empire?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Ray. I've already kept you way, way over today, but I sure do appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Scott. Have a good new year.
You too. All right, y'all. That's the great Ray McGovern. He's at consortiumnews.com and raymcgovern.com. Hey, all, Scott Horton here to let you know Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day, is now available at your local bookstore and Amazon.com. Grab a cold cup of coffee and follow Tacoma, Washington Detective Rick Thompson as he investigates the mystery behind the mass murder of dozens of hot young strippers and roller derby girls all across the West, while he learns new things about the world and himself. Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day. Normal, as we knew it, is a thing of the past. Find it at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon.